Space Generation, The New Frontier. Tomorrow's Space Economy Today.
Picture a satellite, not just orbiting, but thinking, not just processing data, but solving problems in a single moment that would take our fastest supercomputers thousands of years. Now, what if that satellite could detect a threat, calculate a million possible trajectories, and neutralize it, all before we on the ground even registered the launch?
That's the thing, isn't it? It sounds like the opening scene of a blockbuster movie, but it's not science fiction anymore. It's the very real intersection we're exploring today. The strange, almost magical world of quantum computing and its role in the next generation of space defense.
Exactly. And for me, this is personal. I've always been obsessed with the history of technology and how a single invention can completely rewrite the rules of power. Think of radar in World War II or GPS in the first Gulf War. We're standing on the precipice of a shift that could be just as profound, if not more so. It's a screenwriter's dream, really.
And I come at it from a slightly different angle. Growing up, space was always the final frontier, this vast physical space to be explored. But the idea that the most critical territory in space might not be a planet or an orbit, but the computational high ground, that the battle could be won or lost at the subatomic level, that's a paradigm shift that genuinely keeps me up at night.
So, here's the question that will drive our conversation today. As we push further into the cosmos, is the ultimate weapon not a missile or a laser, but an algorithm? An algorithm that can break any code, predict any move, and see through any deception.
That's the heart of it. We're going to delve into how this technology could create an unbreachable shield or an unstoppable sword in orbit. We'll be joined by leading quantum experts and top space defense strategists to unpack the promise, the peril, and the profound implications for all of us down here on Earth. This is going to be a fascinating and, frankly, a critical conversation.
That computational high ground. I can't stop thinking about that phrase. Because it implies a territory that is so clean, so abstract. But the reality of building the machines to seize that ground is messy. Incredibly messy. We're talking about creating conditions colder than deep space, right here on Earth, just to get these things to work for a few fractions of a second.
It's a staggering contradiction, isn't it? The goal is this pristine, almost platonic ideal of computation, but the process is a brute force battle against physics itself. It's like trying to listen for a single pin drop in the middle of a hurricane. The slightest disturbance, the tiniest thermal vibration, a stray magnetic field, and your whole calculation just dissolves.
And that's the word, isn't it? The great enemy here is decoherence. It's such a clinical term for something so profound. The moment the universe looks at your quantum state, the moment it interacts with the outside world in any way, the magic is gone. The superposition collapses. All those parallel calculations just vanish into one single, boring, classical bit.
So, the challenge isn't just building a powerful processor. It's building the most perfect, most isolated vault in the universe to house it in. But it's even worse than that, right? I mean, I've heard that it's not just outside interference. The very components of the computer, the quantum gates themselves, can be a source of that decoherence.
Oh, they're a huge source. Every operation you perform, every time you manipulate a qubit, you're essentially nudging it closer to that cliff edge of collapse. That's why they have to cool them down to these absurd temperatures. You know, 20 millikelvins. That's, what, a tiny fraction of a degree above absolute zero?
And that's in a shielded lab on the ground. Now, let's put that satellite back in orbit. It's not in a quiet vault anymore. It's flying through a sea of radiation. I remember reading a study that said cosmic rays could cause a system to decohere in milliseconds. Milliseconds.
That's the terrifying part. You could have this perfect strategic mind in the sky, capable of calculating a million threat vectors, and a single proton from a solar flare could effectively wipe its memory at the exact moment you need it most. It's the ultimate Achilles heel.
So, how did they even begin to solve that? You can't just build a thicker lead box around it.
Well, the leading idea is something called quantum error correction. But it comes at a mind-boggling cost. The analogy I heard is, imagine writing a sentence. But for every single letter, you have to write a 1,000-page manual, explaining how that letter should be read, and correcting for any potential smudges.
A 1,000-page manual for every letter? That sounds inefficient.
It's incredibly inefficient. The overhead is staggering. Some of the serious estimates I've seen suggest that to build a machine that can actually do something useful, like break a modern encryption key, you might need millions of physical qubits just to create a few hundred stable usable ones, what they call logical qubits.
Wait, say that again. Millions? I thought we were celebrating breakthroughs with systems that have a few hundred, maybe 1,000 physical qubits.
Exactly. One paper estimated that to factor a 2048-bit integer, you'd need something like 3 million physical qubits, and it would still take months. So this idea of an instantaneous all-seeing oracle in space, we have to be realistic. The gap between the lab and low Earth orbit is, well...
Okay, hold on. That number? 3 million physical qubits for a few hundred usable ones? That's not just an astronomical gap. That's a different universe of engineering. It reframes the entire problem. We're not talking about building a better satellite. We're talking about launching the world's most sensitive, cryogenically frozen physics experiment and hoping it survives a cosmic shooting gallery.
It is. And that's the reality check, isn't it? The public conversation is often about the number of qubits a company announces. 1,000, 2,000. But the far more important question is, what's the quality? What's the error rate? How many of those thousands do you have to bundle together just to create one single, reliable, logical qubit that won't lie to you?
So that 1,000-page manual you mentioned? It's basically a committee of physical qubits all watching one qubit that's actually doing the work.
That's a perfect way to put it. A committee that's constantly voting. If one qubit gets zapped by radiation and flips its state, the others can say, nope, you're the outlier. And they can collectively correct that error before it cascades and destroys the entire calculation. But that requires immense redundancy.
But is it just flipping? Like a bit in my laptop flipping from 0 to 1? Or is it something weirder? Because we're in the quantum realm.
Oh, it's so much weirder. So much weirder. You don't just have bit flip errors, where a 0 becomes a 1. You also have what are called phase flip errors.
Okay, what's a phase flip?
Think of a qubit, not as a switch that's up or down, but as a spinning coin. The bit flip is like knocking the coin over from heads to tails. A phase flip doesn't knock it over. It just changes the relationship of its spin relative to all the other spinning coins in the computer. It's a much more subtle corruption. It doesn't change the probability of it being heads or tails, but it ruins its ability to interfere with other qubits, which is where all the computational magic actually comes from.
So you can't even tell it's broken just by looking at it.
Exactly. You only see the damage when you try to perform a complex calculation and the result is just garbage, random noise, and you have to correct for both types of errors simultaneously in real time. It's like trying to patch a boat that's not only leaking water from the bottom, but is also slowly dissolving from the top down.
Which brings me back to space.
If you need this massive committee, this huge overhead, just to keep the system stable on Earth, how does that scale to an orbital platform? The power requirements, the cooling, the sheer mass of 3 million qubits plus their control systems. We're not launching a satellite anymore. We're launching a dedicated space station with a single, incredibly fragile purpose.
That is the brute force approach. That's the path of, let's call it, pessimistic engineering. We assume the qubits will be terrible, so we build a system big enough to compensate. But there is another path, a more elegant one.
Okay, I'm listening. Because the brute force way sounds borderline impossible for a defense application that needs to be nimble.
The other path is to not focus on the error correction, but on error avoidance. What if you could build a qubit that was naturally immune to one of those types of errors? What if the information wasn't stored in a single fragile particle, but in the relationship between particles?
Like a distributed system?
Sort of. It's the idea behind what are called topological qubits. The analogy is this: a normal qubit is like writing a 1 on a piece of paper. A stray mark, a gust of wind, a drop of water, and that 1 can be ruined. A topological qubit is like tying a knot in a rope.
A knot in a rope?
Yeah. You can jiggle the rope, you can shake it, you can move it around, but it's still the same knot. The information, the knottedness, is a global property of the whole system. To destroy the information, you can't just nudge it. You have to physically cut the rope. It's an inherently more robust way of storing information.
So, the search isn't just for more qubits, but for a fundamentally different kind of qubit. One that shrugs off these phase flips or bit flips naturally.
Precisely. If you can build one of those, your error correction overhead plummets. Your 3 million qubits might become 30,000. Suddenly, that orbital platform doesn't look like a sprawling space station anymore. It starts to look a lot more like a satellite again.
But that sounds like a breakthrough in fundamental physics, not just an engineering problem. How close are we to actually tying one of these knots?
That is the billion-dollar question. Maybe trillion. Honestly, it's less like engineering and more like trying to photograph a ghost. Scientists have had glimmers. They've seen phenomena that look like the shadows of these topological states, these knots. But proving you've created one, and that you can control it, that you can reliably tie a knot, and then untie it on command, we're still in the absolute earliest days of that. It's a Nobel Prize waiting to happen, but it might be waiting for a while.
So, we're effectively looking at two completely different paths to the same destination. One is this brutalist architecture, piling millions of flawed components on top of each other, and hoping the collective can withstand the storm.
The brute force path. Yeah.
And the other is a search for a kind of perfect material, a perfect state of matter, the elegant path, as you called it. And it feels like the entire future of this strategic high ground you mentioned hinges on which of those paths pays off first.
It really does. And I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think what we'll see is a hybrid. We'll use the noisy, error-corrected systems for problems they can handle, while the deep research continues in the background, hunting for that ghost. Because the implications of finding it are profound. It changes the timeline for everything.
Which is what I keep coming back to. We've spent this whole time talking about the hardware, the physics, the sheer mind-bending difficulty of making these things work. But we've almost taken for granted what happens when they do.
Right. The what then?
The what then? Because whether it's in 5 years with a topological breakthrough, or in 30 years with a brute force monstrosity, someone, somewhere, will likely put a thinking machine in orbit. A machine that can break our codes, see our secrets, and run circles around our defenses. And all these challenges we've discussed, decoherence, cosmic rays, error correction, they won't matter to the person who suddenly found themselves on the wrong side of that equation.
And that's the ultimate cliffhanger, isn't it? As a storyteller, that's what fascinates me most. We are so focused on the race to build the machine, we've spent far less time writing the script for how we're supposed to live with it. We're building this oracle in the sky, and we haven't yet agreed on what questions we're afraid to ask it.
A perfect place to leave it, I think. It's a reminder that the most complex system we're dealing with isn't the quantum computer itself, but the human one down here on the ground. The technology is accelerating, but our wisdom has to keep pace.
Let's hope it can. This has been an incredible conversation.
It really has. A huge thank you to all our listeners for joining us on this deep dive into the quantum frontier of space defense. We hope it's given you a new lens through which to see that final frontier. Not just as a physical space, but as a computational one, where the future of security might just be written. Until next time, stay curious.